senior U.S. official says Washington will not provide Iran with any sanctions relief until an agreement is reached on the returning to the 2015 nuclear deal. Israeli forces scuffle with Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem al-Quds a day after the regime forces attack on worshippers left over 100 injured. Also ahead, Israel carries out a fresh attack on Gaza, shelling the central part of the besieged enclave. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, a U.S. senior official says Washington will not give Iran any sanctions relief until an agreement is reached between world powers and Tehran on returning to the 2015 nuclear deal, or the JCPOA.
Until we get somewhere, and until we have a firm commitment, and it's very clear that Iran's nuclear program is going to be capped, the problematic aspects reversed and back in a box, we're not going to take any of the pressure off.
McGurk made the remarks in a virtual meeting with Jewish American leaders. The senior official stressed that there's a very long way to go and that the process is complicated. He said President Joe Biden's administration is, quote, not going to pay anything up front just to get a process going. This comes ahead of a third round of JCPOA revival talks in Vienna on Monday. Iran says if the U.S. is interested in the deal, it must abandon its unlawful violations and verifiably remove all sanctions imposed, reimposed, and relabeled since January 2017. Political commentator Wilmer Leon says many U.S. Politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, want to prevent the revival of the JCPOA.
I think to a great degree right now that it is that, it is rhetoric. I think we have to understand that McGirt, or at least the administration, was speaking to the Israelis. We know that the Israelis are doing everything humanly possible to derail this process. They're dragging this out, and they're also very much, not only are they playing to the Israeli contingent, but there is, of course, a very conservative American contingent. There are a lot of Democrats that don't want President Biden to get back into this deal, and that is utterly foolish. I think the majority of Americans want the United States to get back into the deal, especially when we understand exactly what is at stake. So why they continue to play this foolish game and waste this time is... It boggles my mind.
Elsewhere, Israeli police have attacked Palestinians protesting against restrictions on gatherings during the holy month of Ramadan in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Israeli soldiers fired water cannons as well as live ammunition to disperse protesters in the Old City. Palestinians threw stones at regime forces and smashed the security cameras. 8 demonstrators were injured in the violence. The protest came after Israeli forces tried to prevent them from holding their usual Ramadan evening gatherings outside the old city's Damascus Gate by erecting metal barriers. Similar clashes also took place around military checkpoints in several areas in the occupied West Bank. Tensions have been running high in Al-Quds since the start of Ramadan. On Thursday alone, over 100 Palestinian protesters were injured in clashes with Israeli forces. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have conducted fresh attacks against targets in the besieged of the Gaza Strip. We were earlier joined by our correspondent Ashraf Shannon for more details.
An Israeli tanks attacked a security post that belongs to Hamas's military wing, the Yazidin Qassam Brigade, in the east of the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Abu Bridge. That security post was completely destroyed, but no casualties were reported. as security forces in the Gaza Strip have evacuated their posts along the security fence in the east of the enclave following rocket fire from the Gaza Strip into the Israeli regime. Around 4 rockets were fired from the Strip at the so-called Iron Dome missile interception system. Managed to only intercept one of the rockets. The other 3 fell in an open area in the Negev Desert. This is according to the Israeli military.
Early on Thursday, a Syrian surface missile exploded near Israel's Dimona nuclear plant. While Israel has launched an investigation into the incident, many say the explosion shows a failure in the regime's military capabilities. Mariam Saleh is in Beirut.
The Israeli regime seems to be living in an unprecedented state of restlessness after a rocket reached what the Dimona mayor calls the most secure area in the world. Many observers consider the event as a clear intelligence and defense failure, whether the rocket was purposely aimed at the Dimona nuclear site or not.
There is much confusion among the Israelis. This unprecedented breach led the Israelis to question the capability and readiness of the Israeli home front and the capability of the military and political leadership. They are linking this event with other events in the region, mainly concerning Iran and Syria.
The military official statement changed its story on the explosion in an apparent confusion, first saying a Patriot rocket hit the Syrian rocket, while a later statement admitted that Israeli defenses failed to intercept it. Israel claims that SA-4, a long-range projectile handled by Syria's Russian-made S-200 missile system, had been fired at an Israeli aircraft to defend Syria from an Israeli attack, but had, quote, overflown its target and landed near the Dimona nuclear reactor. Israeli media have questioned the official clarification.
There are several questions that the Israeli army needs to ask itself. In the heart of this, there are continuous operations of the Israeli Air Force against Iranian targets in Syria. We have to say honestly, we began this. It began with the attack of the Air Force on Syria, and the Syrians always launch air defense rockets. The Israeli army's analysis is that if they wanted to target the Dimona reactor to retaliate for Natanz operation, they would have fired a more precise missile.
The missile incident came days after Iran warned that it will retaliate for a recent Israeli cyber attack against its Natanz nuclear facility. While the Israeli regime continuously targets Iran's nuclear facilities, it exclusively maintains a military nuclear program and arsenal with hundreds of nuclear warheads, which threaten the entire MENA region.
There is clear that the West is overlooking the Israeli nuclear program despite the fact that everyone knows that this secretive facility holds a military nuclear reactor for around 60 years now. They have an arsenal of tens of nuclear warheads. This nuclear threat is part of the Western hegemony over the region, and it was originally built by the West.
Analysts believe this event foreshadows a certain incapability of the Israeli military to protect its home front in the case of a war with the resistance, which could fire tens of rockets daily. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Pakistan's parliament has deferred a debate on whether to expel the French ambassador over the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Friday's parliament session descended into rowdiness after members disagreed on how to proceed. The speaker adjourned the session indefinitely. Earlier this week, the government reached a resolution with a party called Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, TLP, following bloody anti-France protests. The TLP waged an anti-France campaign months ago, calling for the expulsion of the French envoy. That's amid growing anger over the French government's defense to sacrilegious cartoons of the Prophet republished by a satirical magazine. A French policewoman has been killed in a knife attack near the capital, Paris. The 48-year-old officer was stabbed in the neck. The attacker has been identified as a 36-year-old Tunisian national who was gunned down by police. French prosecutors have opened an anti-terror probe into the incident. Police have arrested 3 people in connection with the attack. After the incident, President Emmanuel Macron said in a tweet that France would never give in to, quote, Islamist terrorism. Macron has in recent months stepped up his rhetoric against Muslims. Back in January, he enraged the followers of Islam worldwide, describing the Abrahamic faith as a religion in crisis. Head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajara, says the French president seeks to use Islamophobia to attract votes of the far right in the upcoming election.
One of the main reasons that these statements are being made is because he needs to use the race card and the Islamophobic card. And because the level of Islamophobia in France is increasing, his opponents are extreme right, and he needs to attract votes away from the extreme right to his party and to himself. This is unfortunately a tit for tat, which goes on increasing the environment of hate day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, statement by statement. And, you know, to turn around and say that we are not going to give in to Islamic terrorism, does that mean that he gives in to other forms of terrorism? Really, this is outrageous by any standard. And France now, it's speeding towards creating a society which at heart of it is Islamophobic, and this is why huge number of Muslim and indeed other human rights advocates have written to EU, have written to United Nations, complaining about France and Macron in particular.
Thousands of people have taken to the streets in the French capital to voice their anger at a government reform on the social security system. Workers and trade unions blame the government for taking advantage of the coronavirus crisis to impose an anti-popular measure. Our correspondent Chris de Honde has more from Paris.
Despite the lockdown and curfew, thousands took the streets in Paris to protest against the reform of the social security system. The main reform concerns unemployed people who will receive less unemployment benefits. They will suffer an average loss of 20%, and some will even lose 45% of their unemployment compensation, meaning 300 euros less by month. Many will not be able to pay their rent. The demonstrators blame the French government for taking advantage of the COVID crisis to accelerate anti-popular measures.
Those who will be sanctioned by this reform are those who already suffer the most from the decrease in the work volume due to the COVID crisis. All the vulnerable workers who already lost their job and who are not financially supported by the government will become unemployed and will be affected by this reform. Yes, the government takes advantage of the crisis and pushes for unjust reforms.
Cultural workers made the demonstration very lively. They are paying a heavy price due to the outbreak of the COVID-19.
Today, people who work in the cultural sector often return to their parents and have no income anymore. Since more than 1 year, we don't work, we don't earn money, and the government does not propose any solution to us. Culture is part of the freedom of expression. Only the big shows financed by the state will survive, and the others will disappear.
Billions are given to big companies, 500 billion euros. At the same time, these companies fire workers. How is it possible that this government is making the shareholders richer instead of helping the population?
Indeed, the French stock exchange market has reached a very high level with more than 6,000 points. The 40 biggest French companies are doing very well since the COVID crisis, but the majority of the population does not benefit from this. More than 100 symbolic cultural places like the Odeon Theater are occupied since weeks, with protesters vowing to continue demonstrations until their demands are met.
The COVID crisis will inevitably lead to loss of jobs for many workers. Also, if unemployment benefits are affected, these workers will be punished twice. Chris Denant, Paris.
The results of a recent survey show a majority of Americans want more accountability amid growing incidents of police brutality against the black community. According to a poll conducted by the Washington Post and ABC News, 60% of Americans believe more should be done to hold police accountable for mistreatment of African Americans. The survey also revealed that 45% of U.S. citizens have confidence that police are properly trained to avoid excessive use of violence. Now, that's down from 54% in 2014. The poll coincided with the trial of Derek Chauvin, the white police officer convicted of killing African-American George Floyd. The man's death in May last year sparked a wave of protests against racial profiling and police brutality in the United States. Activist and commentator Life Malcolm says the problem of racism in the United States isn't going away anytime soon, as it has roots in the country's history.
There are a lot of white people who are dedicated to holding on to the colonial system that keeps their lives of luxury and lives of comfort in place. I mean, everybody, almost, I mean, there are not too many people in the United States of America who could have participated in that poll and did not see the awful lynching of George Floyd by Derek Chauvin. We know that long before Derek Chauvin was ever born, police in this country have killed African people at alarming rates, and we ain't need no smartphone to tell us that. We've always known it, and so we see that poll is a reminder of white people's commitment to holding on to the colony.
The United States says President Joe Biden is set to recognize the mass killings of Armenians by the Ottoman Empire during World War I as genocide. The State Department said the announcement will be made on Saturday, which marks the 106th anniversary of the killings. This would make Biden the first U.S. president to explicitly call the historical event genocide. The move is expected to anger Turkey, Washington's NATO ally, which strongly denies any genocide having been committed. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu warned in an interview earlier this week that such a move by Washington will damage bilateral ties between the two countries. Brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight.
As global solidarity movements in support of Palestine's freedom struggle begin preparations for the annual Quds Day commemoration, America's new administration under Joe Biden remains stuck in the mud. Though the bias against Palestine is reflected in the White House, rumblings of discontent with the Israeli regime's genocidal policies are increasingly becoming louder in the Senate, Congress, academia, universities, and colleges. Quds Day commemorations in cities across America will undoubtedly add to the demand for effective and drastic steps in defense of Palestinian rights. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Iqbal Jassad, editor. This article is published under the heading "Halt Israeli Regime's Genocidal Policies is Quds Day Message." Here's more. As global solidarity movements in support of Palestine's freedom struggle begin preparations for the annual Quds Day commemoration, America's new administration under President Joe Biden remains stuck in the mud. Each year, during the month of Ramadan, the last Friday is dedicated to raising awareness on the illegal dispossession, occupation, and ongoing atrocities perpetrated by the fake regime of Israel. Quds Day, as it was called for by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, has galvanized civil rights movements across the world to support and sustain action programs to free Palestine from the yoke of the Zionist colonialism. This year promises to see an intensification of activities and events. Given the Israeli regime's belligerence, arrogant display of bigotry and intolerance of civilized values, it is doubtful that support for its racist policies, which subjugates Palestinians in ghettos, will be sustained. Ethnic cleansing, the crime of apartheid, war crimes, and defiance of international conventions are parts of a catalogue of horrors which for decades have become synonymous with the Israeli regime. And as Hamas state-sponsored terror is unleashed on a daily basis in Gaza, the West Bank, Al-Quds, and across the rest of 48 Palestine by Zionist-linked settler colonialists, the world cringes in horror. The Israeli regime's notorious security agencies, ranging from Shin Bet to Mossad, have long since eclipsed the terror associated with South Africa's apartheid era killers. That they commit crimes in the full knowledge of their political masters and with the complicity of the regime's defense forces, IDF. In broad daylight, is symbolic of tyranny and despotism. Having enjoyed immunity from prosecution during the Trump era, it believes that this will continue with the Biden administration. So far, all indications are that, notwithstanding the stark contrast between the Republicans and Democrats, the Israeli regime's status as a holy cow binds them. They may differ on a whole range of issues except the Israeli regime. The latest report on Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying he anticipates more normalization agreements for the Israeli regime attests to this. Speaking at the Israeli Embassy virtual celebration of Independence Day, or Yom Ha'atzmaut, Blinken made it clear, the United States welcomes and supports the recent normalization agreements, unquote. Referring to the discredited Abraham Accords imposed by the Trump administration on four Arab dictatorships, Blinken unashamedly pledged to sustain the corruption-laden normalization push. We will continue to urge more countries to normalize relations with Israel, and we look for other opportunities to expand cooperation among countries in the region. As a result, I expect Israel's group of friends to grow even wider in the year ahead, unquote. Servitude to the Israeli regime, which was the hallmark of Donald Trump and his team of right-wing zealots, is continuing unabashedly by Joe Biden and his team. Those who naively believe that replacing Trump with a Democrat would put the brakes on Israeli regime's wanton defiance will surely be disappointed. Under the Trump administration, the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain established full ties with the Zionist regime, and Sudan and Morocco launched the process. And those who had foolishly hoped that President Joe Biden would not maintain the intensives to normalize relations with the Israeli regime will find their trust betrayed. The latest example of the sale of a stealth combat aircraft to the UAE being given the green light illustrates that the White House is unlikely to leverage any incentive to disadvantage the Israeli regime. At a time when atrocities perpetrated by the rogue regime are documented and broadcast via mainstream as well as social media platforms by human rights NGOs in the occupied Palestine, it is striking to note that the Biden administration has chosen to turn a blind eye. Though the bias against Palestine is reflected in the White House, rumblings of discontent with the Zionist regime's genocidal policies are increasingly becoming louder in the Senate, Congress, academia, universities, and colleges. Oats Day commemorations in cities across America will undoubtedly add to the demand for effective and drastic steps in defense of Palestinian rights. So, too, is the expectation of rallies and protest meetings under the banner of Oats Day across many parts of the world, including South Africa.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and condolences to you all on the poignant anniversary of the passing away of the First Lady of Islam, the mother of all true believers, Umm al-Mu'mineen, Hazrat Khadija, peace be upon her. As narrated in the famous Sunni compilation of Hadith, Sahih al-Bukhari, once, when one of his young wives tried to chide him for always remembering Khadija, he said, "By God, the Almighty did not grant me a better wife than her. She believed in me when the people used to mock at me, and she acknowledged me when the people denied me. She shared her wealth and property with me, and she bore me children, which I was not destined to have, through other women."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio, with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing the seventh supplication of this prayer manual, and that is on the supplication of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam during incidents of sorrow, painful occasions, and intense grief. We just began discussing verse number 10, where Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "Indeed, my capacity has been straitened, my Lord, due to what has befallen me, and I am filled with worry by caring what has happened to me, while you have the power to remove what has afflicted me." We said that the meaning of "indeed my capacity has been straitened due to what has befallen me, my Lord," this verse that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam expresses, we must understand that because Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is not only dictating this to only teach, but rather he also expresses it in his own level. And therefore, it is beyond our description of what is he talking about. Although we understood what he wanted to say in our own level, we understood in our own level, but there is a deeper interpretation to that which is beyond the scope of our minds, because we are in a very limited level of comprehension. When you talk of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, when you talk of the Holy Prophet and the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, their level of perfection is beyond description. And therefore, what they meant by saying that, you know, "indeed my capacity has been straitened, my Lord, due to what has befallen me," that is something beyond our understanding. That we should seek the knowledge from them themselves, that what did you mean by saying this? We must understand that unlike a group of people, a group of scholars also, who say that these supplications were only for the sake of teaching others, a group of muhakkikin, that means those very well versed scholars, believe that actually it is not only teaching, but also Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam means it. Now, in what level does he mean it, and so on? This is something which is worthy of reflection.
Rabbana,
a path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds,
the bridge between Allah and His creation,
a bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity, a bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam,
the famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
and then Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam continues and says, "I am filled with worry by caring that what has happened to me, while you have the power to remove what has afflicted me." We interpret it in our level, and we say that how, due to some calamities that come, our situation is constrained. The calamity itself is that constriction and the narrowing down of our capacities. Due to what? Due to what we have ourselves done in the previous years. Because of the problems that we have created for ourselves, that is why we find that, you know, our capacity has become narrow. And because of that, we are worried of what will happen in the future. I cited some examples
But today I would like to cite another tangible example, because it actually pertains to many of us. And that is, you know, throughout the years you had, alhamdulillah, Allah gave you beautiful children, beautiful daughters and sons. But you were very indifferent of their upbringing. You said, I have a lot of money, I'll make sure that they are happy. But you did not realize that that is not what happiness is all about, to give them physical attention, rather to give them spiritual attention. After some years, when they have become old, and not very old, but of that prime age of youth, you find that problems are occurring. And at that time, your capacity is limited, because you can't tell them at that time. They have actually made their whole structure that way. Especially when a person has already crossed 21. When a person has already crossed 21, that is that age, if you look at the riwayat, that after that, it is a very crucial age. If a person, you find, if your child really is a mu'min, is doing the right things, wants to attain his perfection, thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala continuously, because you did the right things. But if you find that no, he is indifferent of religion, he is indifferent of the hereafter, then you have to actually pray for him. And that is the time when you say, actually, oh Allah, my capacity is straightened, it is narrowed down due to what I have already committed. So, oh Allah, remove it, remove these worries that I have for the future. That you are actually worried of the future of your own children. Because what will they do when they come to the society? How would they behave when they come to the society, and so on? So this is something, but with regard to our level that we are talking of. As I said, that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is also reciting this supplication, and therefore he has something more sublime to express before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is beyond our description, and which some of the mystics actually mention in their works. But due to the limit of this discussion here, we would not like to go into the details.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
And then the last phrase that we talked about in our previous session, وَأَنْتَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَى كَشْفِ مَا مُنِيتُ بِهِ. You are the person who is able to take out the situation, to take out the problems that are facing. Because, you know, and we have examples of people that they did not train their children well, but because of supplication and because of struggle, after a certain period, they really could train their children and to bring them properly, slowly and gradually, although 21 years had passed, but it was with difficulty, with what we called a kind of a friendship with them, you know, because the rectification period is not a very easy period. وَأَنْتَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَىٰ كَشْفِ مَا مُنِيتُ بِهِ. While you have the power to remove what has afflicted me and to repel that into which I have fallen. Inshallah, we'll continue with our next discussion. Inshallah, we'll continue next time. We come to the end of the discussion. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Hargez nagirat to abad aqa kasi jay to ra hargez makhod az kaf daham عشق و تولای تو را
یا سجاد.
The Light,
In Hong Kong schools, robots are helping children with autism to live a better life. These robots are part of an educational program called Robot for Autism Behavioral Intervention, or RABI. It is designed for individuals with autism between 3 and 18 years of age and aims to make them more social. The robots engage the children with role-playing and verbal interaction, helping them to resolve issues such as conflicts and bullying. The program was developed by a Hong Kong professor, Catherine So. She says the program will help fight social deprivation of a certain group of people.
We would believe that RABI can help them to, you know, improve their social and behavioral skills and in turn enhancing their quality of their life. So to reduce being excluded in the society and also help them to be included in the future.
Catherine says using robots also helps keep the program structured and predictable, as autistic people are hypersensitive to voices and facial expressions. The program she launched in 2015 has now been adopted in more than 20 non-profit groups and public schools in the country. More than 1,200 children have used it so far. The museum in London has transformed its gift shop into a mini supermarket, selling artist-designed food to help an industry largely affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The Design Museum has reopened its shop after the help of 10 artists. It sells essential products with packaging designed by emerging artists. The market offers goods at the same price as normal markets, both online and at the marketplace. The initiative is led by Camille Walala, who says her project is aimed at supporting the artists reeling from the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, the project is to support artists, and I think because obviously at the moment there's no exhibition, people can't really show any of their creative work, and it's nice to have like a feedback when you're creative. It's nice to know, you know, if people like your work. I think this is a really nice platform to just bring artwork on like everyday product, and actually people are going to probably come and just buy them and probably keep them as a piece of art, like, you know, an affordable piece of art from some artists that you like. I think it's a really nice way to display art, so yeah, I think.
Walala says the project also conveys the message that creativity is as important for living as the other essentials. She says the creative supermarket will also help the museum, which has seen a drop of more than 90% in income because of the pandemic. The shop is open for just 5 days, but artists expect heavy demand. The worldwide trends show people rapidly moving toward modern vehicles now, especially electric cars. But Parisians saw a very unusual kind of EV driving around the city, similar to the one people were using over a century ago. A replica of the 1881 vehicle by French inventor Gustave Prouve was made to celebrate what is regarded as the 140th anniversary of the first viable electric car. Prouve, who is believed to have driven the world's first electric car, combined a rechargeable battery and a cycle, something very similar to a modern e-bike. The car has a motor to assist you, but you can still pedal at the same time.
So Gustave Prouve, when he combined an electric motor, a rechargeable battery and a cycle very similar to this one, that would be one of the earliest, if not the earliest, electric vehicle to be seen on the roads.
A Victorian cycle engineer built the vehicle in North Yorkshire, England. It took him some 2 months to come up with the replica with materials that closely match those used by Prouve himself. Like the original, it has an average speed of approximately 16 kilometres per hour. NASA's small helicopter has made history as it successfully completed its flight on Mars. Receiving instructions from Earth, Ingenuity managed to rise to about 3 meters, hovered for 30 seconds, and then landed on the red planet. The mission marked the first powered, controlled flight on another planet. The helicopter weighs only 1.8 kilograms, has four legs, and is powered by solar panels. Flying a helicopter on Mars is hard because there is not much air to push against to generate the necessary lift. A creative artist in Belgium has come up with an alternative to the face masks, a portable oasis. Alain Vercheron says the mini greenhouse allows him to connect with people while observing social distancing during the coronavirus pandemic. However, the idea is not new. It came to his mind 15 years ago, inspired by the lush oasis he encountered while working in Tunisia.
An oasis is a place of calm, tranquility, cool and well-being in the desert. Here, the fact of having an oasis containing medicinal plants means I am also protecting myself from harm coming from the outside, just like I could at an oasis in the middle of the desert.
Doesn't that look bizarre? Well, he says he has asthma, and breathing with the device is easier than a face mask. The 61-year-old artist hopes his invention also raises awareness of environment protection. Pumas are solitary animals that do not usually get along well with humans. However, a Russian family has been living with an extraordinarily friendly mountain lion for 5 years. Now, Alexandra and Maria Dmitriev bought little Messi from a zoo 5 years ago. The cat could barely walk then. With the tender care of the couple, he soon regained his strength. Messi's growth was stunted due to his malnutrition. Interestingly, the adorable puma has never shown any aggression toward humans. Well, it looks very friendly. Messi's family has converted their home to meet his natural needs. They have also set up social media accounts for him on Instagram and YouTube, where he has millions of followers.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Malaysian farmers tap classical music and massages to grow one of the world's most expensive fruits, Japanese muskmelons. The farmers believe the method is the best way to grow Japanese muskmelons in Malaysia's hot tropical weather. They regularly rub the melons with a soft cloth or glove. That's a practice, the farmers say, enhance the melon's flavor. To stimulate their growth, classical music is played in greenhouses, and now all these efforts have paid off following constant trials. The farmers are finally selling their prized luxury fruits of labor on the market.
April is usually marked by multi-day festivities across much of Southeast Asia, including Myanmar, as they observe the Buddhist New Year. The traditional New Year in Myanmar this year began on Tuesday with five-day celebrations known as Tengyan. The occasion is usually celebrated with prayers, ritual cleaning of Buddha images in temples, and public water splashing on the streets. They think water can wash their souls and all evil deeds. People also flock to temples with traditional pots containing flowers and receive blessings from monks. But typically joyous period of celebration is looking very different this year amid coronavirus and political crises in Myanmar.
A dozen lucky penguins have been returned to the wild after rehabilitating from malnutrition and anemia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Argentina. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists. Some of them had lost their plumage due to malnutrition, but they recovered their feathers after receiving special nutrients. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile. People in Britain are marking the easing of lockdowns implemented to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Words like freedom, hope, family, reunion and relief have been projected on the walls of the UK's most iconic landmarks, as well as shops and department stores, to show people's feelings. A British company commissioned a survey to find the words that best summed up people's feeling after months of lockdown began to be lifted on Monday. Those celebrating the event say reunion is the word that can best express their feelings.
The most powerful word in there for me is reunion. We've all been apart from each other, friends, loved ones, colleagues, who are also loved ones, I suppose, in some cases, and really looking forward to getting back to my friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time, and imagine a lot of the British public are too.
The event comes as the UK has been the worst hit nation with a pandemic across Europe. The country saw a staggering number of infections and deaths for months. This prompted authorities to impose restrictions in an effort to bring the pandemic under control.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
In the early days of the pandemic in the US, little was certain about the future, if students would defer fall enrollment, how states might cut education funding, or if the federal government would step in to offset the financial impact of the crisis, says Kerry Cardoza, journalist, in an article titled, US colleges are using COVID as an excuse for austerity. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. As COVID-19 swept across the U.S. last winter and spring, colleges and universities adapted swiftly to the situation. Though it was swift, it was not without pain. Just as quickly as professors learned to teach through a screen on Zoom, administrations slashed budgets. In the early days of the pandemic, little was certain about the future. If students would defer fall enrolled, how states might cut education funding, or if the federal government would step in to offset the financial impact of the crisis. Nevertheless, public and private higher education institutions across the U.S. put in place austerity measures ahead of what they foresaw as a fiscal emergency. Recent data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, bears this out, largely in the form of a reduced workforce. BLS data released in February 2021 estimated that higher education lost 650,000 workers, a 13% reduction in the sector since February 2020. While many schools have seen lower enrollment numbers and other financial losses, some union organizers say that these cuts were premature premediated and in some cases draconian. Anita Argyris, president of the Professional Staff Union, PSU, at UMass Boston, says the University of Massachusetts system, which is composed of 6 campuses, has been cutting costs for years as public education has become more privatized, in part due to disinvestment from the government. We privatize, we push all these costs off the state and onto the individual campuses and individual workers, and then we drive this corporate financial model of how to run the institution with completely inverted priorities. The priorities are no longer education and accessibility. The priority is how much profit are you making, she says. There is something fundamentally wrong for a public institution to be operating that way. Add COVID on top of that, and it just becomes another excuse, but they are carrying out exactly the same policies. In a statement, spokesperson for UMass says that out of 18,000 workers, there were fewer than 20 actual layoffs and 1,200 indefinite furloughs. Yet previous reports have shown that in July, 134 employees across the system had been laid off, along with more than 1,000 student and temporary positions cut, and many more not being filled. Thousands more have taken unpaid furloughs. At UMass Amherst, members of the PSU effectively had their wages reduced to nearly 6% in 2020 due to a series of voluntary unpaid furloughs, according to PSU co-chair Brad Turner. They pushed for these furloughs and staff reductions based on sort of budget projections, where they were projecting a fiscal emergency that never turned out, says Andrew Gurry, communication chair of the PSU at UMass Amherst. Gurry says the Board of Trustees, Administration and Finance Committee projected over $83 million in losses in July, but that estimate then increased to $168.6 million the following month. As of December, the Board of Trustees now projects a $26 million surplus. The drop in enrollment at UMass Amherst was minimal. There was level funding from the state and 3 rounds of federal stimulus packages. We're seeing from December to March, these deficits they were projecting are being completely erased, says Turner. Since last March, the university has gotten about $53 million it can spend however it wants, not on students. And for the university system, that number is about $141.5 million. The CARES Act language notes that institutions should use the funds promptly and to the greatest extent practicable, preferably within a year. Even more egregious, organizers say, are the vast reserves the university has but refuses to touch. The UMass system has an emergency stabilization fund of around $125 million, which Board of Trustees member Michael V. O'Brien mused could only be spent on a completely unforeseen cataclysm like an asteroid strike. The Massachusetts Teachers Association also uncovered unrestricted endowment funds, one holding $323 million at the end of fiscal year 2019 slated for investment. A 2020 report stated the UMass endowment was $922 million. In an email, UMass Executive Director of Communications John Ho said, recklessly draining reserves, endowments, and stabilization funds would endanger the long-term financial viability of the university and could result in deeper permanent cuts and layoffs and tuition increases down the road. He also noted that much of the university's net worth is already financially and or legally committed to a designated purpose.